Welcome, everybody, to episode one of the No Normal Show for Thursday, June 25th, 2020, brought to you by Revive Health. This is our weekly deep dive into how hospital and health system marketers can navigate what we're calling the no normal. I am Chris Bevelo, health systems practice lead at Revive Health and your host for the show. I am joined by Chase Kleckner, who is senior marketing manager at Revive Health and our show's producer. Hello, Chase.
Hey, Chris. Excited for the new show.
Yeah. Glad to be back. And we are also joined by Brandon Edwards, CEO and founder at Revive Health, who's going to help us kick off this show right. Hey, Brandon.
How are you?
Doing well. I am jealous that I do not have a felt background. You guys look great. You look ready to go.
We'll ship you one. Yeah.
And I'm like that highlights cartoon of like, which one doesn't belong? I should. Yes. Please ship one to me and I'll see if I can squeeze it in behind me. So welcome, everybody, and this is going to be a great journey for us. So glad you started off with us right from the get-go. Some notes just off the top. Obviously, this is a brand new podcast for us. It's a spinoff of our Daily Briefing Live, which if you want to kind of hear why that was ended and this was begun, you can go to the last episode of the Daily Briefing Live. What do we mean by the no normal? We're actually going to dive into that at the outset of the show here with Brandon. So we'll save that. If you do want to know more about it, please check out our blog post at thinkrevivehealth.com and you can read about it there as well. But we're going to dive into it pretty in depth today. And moving forward, everything we talk about is going to be in the context of the no normal. We'll be sharing industry trends, research, stories from those within and outside the industry, our own perspective, all of these things aimed at helping health system and hospital marketers navigate the no normal successfully. As we move through the show, as we did with the last one, if you were an attendee of the last podcast, we want this to be interactive. So use the Q&A queue in Zoom to line up your questions. We will take those. Certainly we'll have time at the end. This show is going to go a little longer, assuming we have enough content each time. It could go up to 45 minutes. We'll see. We'll definitely leave time for questions at the end, though sometimes we answer them as we go. So just make sure you put them in the Q&A queue. You can use the chat function. We'll be using that. Chase will be putting links in the chat function so you can follow along when we point at resources online. You can also use that to talk with other attendees. But if you've got a question for us, make sure you put it in the Q&A queue. And last note, remember you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. As we did before, we're always going to be posting a recording of the episode by the end of the day on our website at thinkrevivehealth.com. And you can go to thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19 to find this more directly. So with that, we're going to get right into the content. We do have some resources we want to share, but actually we're going to bring those forward as we talk today. So we'll just wait until we get into it. But we wanted to start with this idea of no normal. What do we mean by no normal? And obviously it's a play off of new normal. And we see and we hear all of us, you know, we hear this kind of in a couple ways. We hear it in when will we get back to normal and or what will the new normal look like? And as we at Revive have been, you know, working through this period of COVID-19, working with clients throughout the healthcare industry, we've really just come to have the perspective that, look, we have no idea what normal is going to look like, or even when we could start calling things normal again. We really believe that COVID-19 has the potential to have the same kind of level of impact on our society and on the world as things like the Great Depression, World War II, 9/11, meaning there could be profound lasting change to our society. And as we are unfortunately hearing today, we're still in the middle of this. This is not going away anytime soon. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more in terms of the principles we think that folks need to think about. But that's where we think, you know, actually what we're living in is an environment we'd call the no normal. And for healthcare, it's going to take months, maybe years, for us to get to a place where we feel stable And we can start saying, okay, things have normalized, and what that means, we have no idea at this point, right? But given all that, we can't stop moving forward. We can't stop trying to grow, recover from the financial strain that we've had in this industry. We've got to learn to live and thrive in this uncertainty. And that's what this podcast is all about. So before we kind of get into some principles, Brandon, is there anything you want to add to that in terms of just how we're thinking about the no normal?
Maybe just one thing. And that is that, yeah, I think this runs counter to what we all want as humans, right? Forget about us being marketers, forget about us working in healthcare. What we all want is to sort of know what to expect, to know what the norms are, to know what, you know, and so I think we've been really careful with this no normal thing, is that, you know, it's not the way it was, but it's not quite what whatever this new normal thing that people talk about will be either. I think so much of this is kind of leaning into the uncertainty, mm-hmm. and recognizing that we have to meet people where they are right now. Some of that will prove to be lasting. Some of that may not. But to sort of assume that this is the way that it's going to be until there's a vaccine, and then everything's going to go back to the way it was, I think is incredibly naive. And I think probably not terribly helpful for us either, as we think about, you know, how our jobs, how marketing shows up in a healthcare context in a world that's just different. It's this, you nailed it, that our societal norms are just going to be different for some sustained period of time. So let's figure out how to make the absolute most of that we can.
I'm so glad you brought that up. My wife, who's a therapist, and I told her, hey, we're starting our new show today. It's called The No Normal. And she's like, you know, nobody wants that. nobody wants to hear that there's not something normal. We're all just craving mentally and emotionally normality and stability. And I'm like, yeah, I hear you. But it is the reality of the world that we're in business-wise, if not overall. And to your point, Brandon, instead of, you know, kind of just hoping it goes away or biding our time, let's lean into it. Let's learn how to not just survive, but to thrive in this environment. Because as we'll talk about, we think this is going to be this level of uncertainty that we're living in. It's gonna take some time. And it's not the fall. It's not maybe even the spring. And we'll talk about that in terms of why we think this is a lasting kind of concept. So let's take that and kind of dive into just five principles we think health system marketers really need to kind of embrace if they want to thrive in the no normal. And the first is no assumptions. So we really just can't assume that what we knew to be smart or effective yesterday or even today is going to be smart or successful tomorrow. All the truths, maxims, strategies, best practices, it doesn't mean we throw them all out the window and we're just starting from scratch. But we really have to make sure that we are not assuming that what we did is going to be great going forward. We have to revisit them. We may have to revise them. Yes, we may have to toss some out. But we just can't assume anything anymore. And I think there's a number of ways, you know, we can think about that, Brandon. I don't know if you've got, you know, examples off the top of your head. I've got a couple, but I mean, it just starts there, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting. The biggest piece to me that pops out when I think about this is market research, right? That we've been doing our annual brand surveys for years, and we look at NRC data and we look at all this, and all those things are valuable. Don't get me wrong. I just think that the shelf life now of research is so short. And I think we've seen that even in the research that we've commissioned, right? We've done now three national surveys on consumers and then smaller subset qualitative research with people who deferred care. And one of the things that we saw is during those 3 months, huge shifts, survey to survey to survey. And I think there's every reason to expect that that will continue. So I think, you know, on the one hand, you're right, no assumptions. I think the natural instinct then is, well, let's go research that and we will get the answer. I'll say, well, I think you'll get the answer. And I think that answer will be good for about 2 or 4 weeks. and it might be longer, and that might be good enough, right, for a period of time. But, you know, that's the one that just jumps out to me immediately is we're big believers in research. We want clients to be believers in research. Shelf life's just shorter. right now.
Yeah. An obvious one to me is, I think before all this, we would have assumed that if you identify an issue with a patient and diagnose that patient and tell them the next step is this, that they will then do that. And we know that in general, there's, you know, if that's like, you know, prescribed medication, then not everybody follows through and all of that. But if we're talking about like hip surgery or whatever, people in general didn't go ahead to the next step. They might seek a second opinion. Certainly there's always people with challenges financially or otherwise, but now you just can't assume that. No. You can't assume that even if you get them to that place, that they're going to say, yep, and I'm going to go ahead and go forward with that, for all kinds of reasons that are exacerbated because of this pandemic, both fear of coming back in, financial strain, loss of job, loss of insurance. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a story in the New York Times the other day about, hey, a lot of people aren't coming back in. Maybe that's not a bad thing because we've always overprescribed. Like, well, I don't know if that's fair or not. Like, I think we're more worried about people not coming in for stroke than over diagnosing strokes. But all of those things are just examples of, you can't assume that that's just going to, those dominoes will fall. We've talked about that, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's right.
All right. So let's talk about the next one. So the second principle is, we're living in what we would call a fluid environment. So the no normal, I think this is maybe obvious, is not a constant state. So we're not talking about this in related just to what's happening now with COVID-19. And I think, unfortunately, again, the swoop back up and the danger we're seeing in Florida, Texas. I mean, just today, the governor of Texas announced close all, you know, elective procedures again. Like they're walking it back. Houston is at, you know, Houston, we have a problem. We're saturated in terms of beds and ICU beds, right? Phoenix in big trouble, right? So we're not even through COVID-19 in the way we had to deal with it in March and April. But even when we are, it's still going to be fluid because we're still going to be coming out of it. And that may not happen to, like you said, Brennan, probably through till the spring, because we're going to be dealing with COVID and the normal flu in the winter. And it probably will take that long just to get a vaccine. But even then, we've got an economic, you know, devastation that's not probably going away or fixing itself anytime soon. And it has the potential to get worse. How all of this then actually settles, the dust settles, how long does that take? How do we learn once the dust settles, you know, what is normal and what works best in normal? That's why you can start looking at this, not in terms of just the rest of 2020 or maybe even 2021, but this could be 2 or 3 years before we have normal. And all on the way, it's going to be a fluid situation.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's quantitative and qualitative aspects of this, right? So I'll do an example that's not healthcare, I think, just to sort of help us with some context or perspective. Recent estimates that I've seen from people that are in the restaurant industry say that they think between 50 and 60% of restaurants may never reopen, or may, you know, reopen only to close. And I want, just for a moment, picture 50 to 60% of restaurants not existing anymore, right? It's sort of staggering, right? And actually, it might not be the ones we think, because it's actually very, very high-end restaurants have had a harder time adapting to COVID and takeout and curbside delivery and all that, because so much of it's the experience, right? It's being there and watching the chef and the orchestra that is service. I think that's the quantitative aspect. Now look at the qualitative. You know, is the experience of going there going to be the same? Is it going to feel the same? My wife and I have a trip planned for September, and we're honestly debating, like, those places are going to be open, but will it be fun? You know, like, do we want to go there? I mean, it's such a shallow example compared to a lot of the other things we're talking about. But I think that that's a lot of what we mean when we talk about this fluidity, is it's just going to be different, and it's going to take some time to settle out. I think it's pretty widely believed that the market's been on kind of a sugar high here, and that there are going to be some gigantic layoffs coming in July. when CARES money runs out, when the unemployment money changes, you know, when we're moving into Q3 for a lot of businesses. So there's a thousand of these examples that I think we have to embrace, and not all of them are bad, right? I mentioned two that sort of suck, but they're not all bad. Some of them, you know, could conceivably be good, but they all have implications for how healthcare marketing shows up in the cultural context, as well as just the realities of what we need to get people comfortable doing in this environment.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of a doubling down on what we said, like no assumptions. You know, if this is a fluid situation, which it will definitely be for at least a year, that means that if we find a solution that works now, we can't assume that that would work in November or April or September of next year. It may, and we're not saying like, hey, everything's short-term impact. That's not the point here, or that we're going to be blindly like blindfolded in a room, just bumping into stuff and hoping we bump into the right things. We just can't assume that once we set a course that it's going to stick, because the world is going to be changing around us. I mean, we already had a upheaval in this industry before COVID, more than maybe ever in the history of healthcare. We used to talk about that all the time with clients, right? Like you're navigating this storm. Well, crap. If that was a storm, what is this? Like that was like a little downpour. Now we're in like a category 4 hurricane. So I think it just doubles down on that first with no assumptions, and it alludes to the third one. And Brandon, you hit on this, but it's the idea that if we can't make assumptions anymore, and if it's a fluid environment, boy, we have to be in a mindset of constant learning. That means we have to learn more. We have to learn more faster. I hate to use the word agile because that gets overused and cliche and all that, but we have to be agile in the traditional nimble way. The way I've talked about it is the feedback loop that we have needs to become like a feedback racetrack. Like it needs to go way faster. You need to repeat it way often. Obviously data is the fuel for that. But I think that's going to be a different way to operate than most of us are used to.
And I think there's some really positive signs that came out of COVID on that front. I think we were making decisions faster than we ever have. I think we watched a lot of our clients making decisions a lot faster. You know, everybody wants to point to the telehealth example, and it is a good one, although there are many others as well. And I think that, you know, we have seen decision-making processes accelerate, feedback loops really tighten. And I think to your point, it's going to be even more necessary, because I think this sort of idea of like, oh, COVID's going to happen in waves, and then there's going to be this second wave that hits when the flu hits. And it's like, foo, it's not that simple. Yeah. It's just happening all the time. More some places, less in others. God knows we do not understand nearly enough about this yet, you know, to make all the decisions we need to make. But I think that I think the industry's responding better to that, maybe even than we hoped that it would. Right? People are just moving quickly and recognizing that they have to. Right? That I think I'll make something explicit, maybe that's implicit. If we fail to do that, if we don't engage in that constant learning, I think really we delude ourselves into thinking that moving slowly isn't a decision, but it is, right? Not deciding is a decision. It's staying in the status quo. It's staying in the current state, and moving fast, even if there are mistakes that are made, allow you to learn and adjust. And I think that's probably this big takeaway of constant learning doesn't mean every decision is going to be right. It just means it's going to let you get to right faster.
Yeah. And I think, you know, mother's the, what is it? Necessity is the mother of invention.
There you go. Mother's
necessity of invention. Yeah. So virtual visits, you brought that up, and it's an obvious one. You know, we hear these astronomical, like exponential increases in the usage of some of the clients and people we've talked to, and almost to a system, they've all said, well, we reacted fast, but now we're trying to figure out what our permanent path is. And I kind of go, okay, just don't do that the way that you used to do it. It reminds me of a story back when you know, Minute Clinic started in the Twin Cities. It was called Quick Medics when it first came out. And so we saw that thing grow where I live before anybody else did. And I remember when there was a story about Walmart way back, this is, I don't even know how long ago, adding Minute Clinic-like things to their stores. And they interviewed the VP of innovation for a large health system in Minnesota, and I won't say which one. And his response was, we have studied the concept of a mini clinic for 3 years and have decided that that's not really a model that we think is going to work for us. Now, not only was that wrong, but what the hell takes 3 years to study when you're standing up a nurse practitioner in a mall? So honestly, right? And so hopefully as whenever things start calming down, we don't kind of settle back into the, okay, now we can take our long ponderous.
Yeah, I think probably tying into the no assumptions and the fluid environment, I hear a lot from people like, well, are payers going to continue to pay for it? And what does it look like and all that? And I have very distinct opinions on this topic, probably most of which are wrong, but very distinct opinions. I have an immediate adverse reaction to the phrase virtual care right out of the gate. Nobody wants virtual anything when it comes to care, right? What they really want is sort of care anywhere.
Yeah. Right?
And that's really what telehealth provides. Mm-hmm. It's the opportunity for care at home, for care sitting in your car, for care sitting in your office, or whatever that is. But I do think there are some really central questions that will have to be answered, right? What's your strategy for being paid for it? What's your strategy for ensuring that the payers are paying for your doctors to provide telehealth in your market to your patients, so the loyalty is accruing to you? But to your point, it is an example among hundreds of examples. And if we do, if we were sort of revert to type, right, the idea of let's do all this studying and let's have committees, and you know, my ideal is like, let's not, let's make decisions, and then we'll see what we learn from that and adjust course along the way.
Right, right. Okay, so that was number three. So again, just to recap, and a reminder, if you've got questions for Brandon and I or Chase, put them in the Q&A chat. First principle, no assumptions. Second principle, fluid environment. Third principle, constant learning. Fourth principle, and I think we've touched on this a little bit as well, is the idea that there are massive ripples from this. This isn't just about COVID-19. COVID-19 is the trigger for so much of what's going to happen. But we've obviously also experienced over the last month societal unrest at a level that is, you know, in my generation, I think you really almost have to go back to the 60s. And that's not even my generation, right? I think I was born, I was a year old when we hit the level of, you know, kind of upheaval society-wise that we've seen as a result of the George Floyd incident and everything that's come after it. So there's that's part of this, and it's not disconnected necessarily. But as this moves forward, again, as COVID starts becoming hopefully less of an issue, there's so many other things that we have to think about. The economy is probably the biggest, regulations and change in our industry. There's just going to be a lot of dimensions, and you know, we just have to be ready for that. We have to be ready for this churn beyond just COVID.
Yeah, you know what? I may be in a minority opinion about this overall, but I really feel like what's being revealed in this time are not new things. I actually think most of them are things that have always been there that we collectively have failed to address and lean into the way that we should. And I think, you know, perhaps focusing less in this conversation from my standpoint on institutional racism, but more on the health application of institutional racism and on racial disparities in health, which have its roots in 1,000 things, right? It has its roots in things like food deserts, and it has its roots in things like access to care. It has its roots in things like how treatment is affected by race and the race of the patient versus the race of the caregiver. And, you know, there's been a number of studies on all of these different topics, but let's be honest, like, these are not new problems. Right. These are not things that are just emerging any more than institutional racism and the violence that we've seen recently is new. It's that we're paying a different kind of attention to it. And, you know, I'm not sure why those things are converging. It may be that, you know, we've all been cooped up for a long time and had an opportunity to think about things differently or react to things differently. Maybe people are just genuinely pissed off and fed up, and that's kind of understandable in this environment. But your point on the ripples, like, there are business ripples, but that part of that no normal, I think, is recognizing that it's 10 years of societal advance that's being accelerated into a few months. Mm-hmm. It's 10 years of digital innovation being accelerated into a few months. I really don't believe it's new things we've just never thought of before. It's the stuff that's been there that's just all happening a lot faster, I think.
Yeah. Yep. Which brings us to the last one, which is, and this goes all the way back to the point you made early on, Brandon, which is we need to, the last principle to thrive in this era of no normal is we have to become comfortable with chaos. We have to be comfortable with speed. We have to be comfortable with not having all the answers, with not having kind of comfy guidelines and benchmarks that we've always relied on in the past, with not always knowing which way to go. We have to be comfortable with that because we still have to go. We still have to move. We still have to succeed. We still have to thrive. And that requires, you know, kind of just being okay in this tumult, that's the right word, which, you know, for most of us is not where we're comfortable.
Yeah, you know, I have a bias on this because, you know, when you start a business and you're an entrepreneur, if you're not comfortable in chaos, you should probably just stop there, right? and I think, you know, you guys know this, but our audience may not, is this is something we preach to our staff a lot, right? Is if you're just looking to do the same thing over and over and over again, if you're intimidated by chaos and change and new things, this is not going to be the place for you. Right? Like, this is a place that we lean into that discomfort. We solve new problems. We tackle things we haven't done before. And that's what makes, you know, the firm a learning environment, but the industry is a learning environment in that way. And I think, you know, to me, this chaos, and maybe I'll focus on one audience we haven't talked a lot about, and that's physicians in this. I think that the single biggest, you know, piece of chaos, if you want to call it that, is that we're coming off of a healthcare system for 30, 40, 50 years has really been designed around the physician and the physician's throughput and efficiency and attention and income and all those things. And that's not a knock on doctors. Like, wouldn't we all love the system to be designed around us? But I think that there is this moment, there is this opportunity in this chaos to say, how do we actually redesign aspects of the healthcare system to center around the consumer? Mm-hmm. And yet that is going to be chaotic for physicians. That's actually going to be chaotic for organizations navigating something like that. But I'm not sure that there's anything better that could come out of it in terms of how consumers are engaged and how it affects people's health. But again, it's like, that's one piece of chaos, not
right,
all of the chaos that we have to be comfortable navigating through.
Yeah. So that of all of these might be the hardest principle to follow because it does get to individuals and change, right? Like it's really about being comfortable with change. But in this case, really fast change and change an environment that we just can never get our hands on probably in the way we would feel comfortable to move forward. We just got to be okay with that. So with those five principles in mind, let's go ahead and talk about, a paper we just put out. So Chase will provide a link to it. We co-authored this with our partners at Dentons, which is the world's largest law firm. It's titled Five Core Issues for Providers Post COVID-19. So again, we're not saying that, hey, we got to be okay in chaos, or we're just going to float around and blindly do whatever. We still need to try to pick a lane. We still need to try to figure out a way forward. And so we've pulled together a paper that looks at, we've identified five key issues or challenges or even opportunities for providers at a business level. And the five are maintaining a safe environment, so not a surprise, virtual care, which we've hit on a bunch, working capital solutions, so how in the world are you going to stay afloat and all the different options there, the idea of physician-hospital integration, which is going to be changing, and then re-examining scale. And we won't touch on all those because we don't have time. But again, it's a great example of, hey, we still have to try to figure this stuff out. And we would put this paper out to you. We would encourage you to read it and embrace it and leverage it as much as you can. But don't assume that in a month, some of this stuff isn't going to have changed and you're going to have to adjust, right? But let's pick one, Brandon. Let's talk about re-examining scale. What do we mean by that a little bit? And how should people think about it in terms of how they move forward with strategy?
Yeah, and this is actually going to be a big topic on our Operation Recovery podcast over the next few months here, among other topics. And that, as you know, that podcast really focuses on two things. It's sort of how are payer-provider relations affected by COVID and in the post-COVID environment, but also sort of how are big business pivot issues like M&A affected by this. And so we sort of kicked off this issue, as you mentioned, with Denton's, Dan Higgins at Denton's, who is the lead advisor for Dignity in the CHI in the CHI Dignity merger that created Common Spirit, among many, many others. And you know, it was really interesting because I think the we had been on kind of a fairly steady state of consolidation in the provider space, right? That the payer space may not be finished consolidating, but it's got to be close, right? Like the last two really big deals were turned down by the Department by the FTC, excuse me. Well, I guess ultimately it was the courts that turned them down. But you know, there will continue to be some acquisitions there. But the hospital side had been on sort of a fairly regular cadence of consolidation, and this definite sort of trend towards scale, right? And you know, with good and bad, I think you know, there's been a lot written on the consolidation side, critical of hospital consolidation, driving up prices allegedly, or not perhaps delivering quality as promised. Not sure there's a ton of nuance in that research as to sort of what level of scale does benefit still accrue and then when does it stop accruing. I think there's some bias in some of that research in terms of who's sponsoring it and what they're looking at. But I think it is perfectly reasonable to look at what's happening with COVID and how the healthcare system is affected by COVID and extrapolate some issues. So a few things we think that have come out of that. There seems to be, generally speaking, a belief that COVID and the attendant financial difficulties will accelerate consolidation on the hospital side. That we should see not just individual hospitals rolled up, but more and more kind of mega systems created, the big getting bigger, smaller systems being acquired by those that have more stable balance sheets or frankly, better supply chain management when we really look at a lot of those changes. I think perhaps where there is a little less consistent view is on the physician side. I think there are many people who believe that hospitals will take this opportunity to shed physicians from their employed physician base to reduce subsidies and reduce the losses associated with those. But there are, you know, probably just as many industry experts we've talked to say, no, I think hospitals will be buyers during this time, and that they will actually take it as an opportunity to acquire more physicians more cheaply, perhaps than they would have in the arms race that we were experiencing before this. And then there's sort of this interesting countercultural trend, if you want to call it that, of reversing affiliations and mergers. So whether that was AtlantiCare with Geisinger or Hoag now with Providence or others, that you we may see some who have been in systems for a while where either their combined experience or COVID or both have shown them that perhaps that wasn't all that they thought it was going to be and didn't have all of the attendant benefits. So, yeah, I think what we're really going to focus on in that kind of re-examining scale are all of the component parts of that: culture, governance, brand, capital, access to capital, supply chain management, all these different issues in the coming months, because we think it's not just whether that scale continues, but it's why, and it's what will make it successful in that. It'll be interesting to see how the capital markets react to this, because I think in general, outside of healthcare, lending on, you know, on the real estate side is kind of shut down. Non-residential lending side, really, really difficult, you know, to capitalize commercial real estate And, you know, health systems are nothing if not big, gigantic real estate plays in some ways, right? So there will be some complicating factors, but it's a really interesting topic because I think if scale is going to be successful, we're going to have to address some of the criticisms about price and quality head on. And it's going to have to be done with data ultimately.
Right, right. So given that, again, kind of not chaotic, but just open environment, right? A lot of different ways it could go, a lot of different factors. The first thing that comes to my mind, if you're a health system marketer, is brand. You mentioned it, right? So we always try to push the marketer to be at the table, not when they're normally brought to the table, which I think is hilariously a year after the deal signed and somebody's like, crap, we got to figure out this brand thing. It's been a year. You haven't figured it out yet. But well before that, both in understanding like, well, what are the implications of this deal or that deal or this spinoff or whatever it is on our brand? And we don't just mean the name, though that's part of it, but on the brand value, on our position, on why people would want to come to us. So if you're talking about, Brandon, examples of systems that are splitting apart, what does that mean? You know, or coming together, trying to get ahead of that is the key.
Yeah. I think we'll pick one that's been in the news just as an interesting example. You know, Beaumont had an announced deal that was in process with Summa Health and Summa Care, Summa Health's health plan, that they announced just a few weeks ago, they were ending the pursuit of that transaction. And within weeks, it was at least in the media, it was talked about that now Beaumont, Aurora Advocate or Advocate Aurora, we're in talks to come together. And so one sort of interesting that Beaumont moved away from an acquisition, one that was also gonna give them a health plan platform across their markets, to compete more directly with Henry Ford and HAP, as well as other, you know, other players that are in Michigan, but that they're seeking to potentially merge with a much larger organization in Advocate Aurora, which I actually believe has its own health plan as well, if I'm not mistaken. So sort of interesting that you have these size transactions are so big and so complex and take so long to move through that we went from one partner being, you know, Beaumont acquiring one to another situation that quickly, I think really points out all the stuff we're talking about in the no normal, right?
Yeah.
Those normally would have been, those events would have been 6 to 12 months apart.
Right.
Not 2 weeks apart or 3 weeks apart, right? Just it's kind of incomprehensible in terms of what we've seen, at least in my professional lifetime.
So Brandon, we've got a question. You had mentioned, you know, data is going to be the way that we determine what's going to work and what's not. And somebody's asked what kind of data would be good to address the price and quality issue that you mentioned. And I think what you were referring to was there's been a lot of research before COVID, but recently about these mega mergers, not really driving improved quality or improved prices for consumers, which normally a merger would do, like the, and also as usually what the press release will say a merger will do. We know that the reality is oftentimes different why these things happen, but publicly it's like, hey, by bringing system A and system B together, we'll be able to improve clinical quality and drive down costs and all the magical, beautiful things we'd want to do. But that has not proven to actually be happening. And I don't know if that is what you were referring to, but in terms of data, you know, do you have examples? And we can certainly provide them if you don't have them top of mind.
Yeah. So first of all, I think there's a problem in the premise of most of these deals, and you hit on it, right? Is we talk about these transactions as though there's going to be this enormous consumer benefit around quality or price. And I think the reality is that I don't think that that's often true. And I want to be really clear about what I mean by that, right? So the benefit to consumers in a lot of these transactions, not all of them, but a lot of them, is that the buyer is actually going to keep a hospital and physicians available to communities where they otherwise might not be available because those organizations or those practices would go bankrupt, and that they are simply not sustainable enterprises financially at the rates that the health plans will pay them, or with the volume that they're able to attract given their position in the market, or, you know, particularly for rural facilities, just inadequate, inadequate access to capital and all of those kinds of things. I think that very often when people say, oh, you know, consolidation is going to drive up pricing, it's like, well, in a lot of cases, it might be true. But the reason that that is the pricing was so bad at the hospital being acquired that the alternatives were to be acquired and become more expensive or close. And if you ask people to be honest, would you rather pay more and have that hospital stay in your community or see it close? The answer is going to be, I would rather pay more if it kept access to care in my community. I think the quality side's a little trickier, right? And the reason I say that is this sort of promise that bigger is going to deliver quality, it may actually be a little bit more difficult in some circumstances, because you get further and further from the local physician. You get further and further from where care is actually being provided. And I think there's a fair amount of evidence in healthcare that we want standardized protocols, we want evidence-based medicine, but we also recognize that having somebody in Seattle tell a doctor in Orange County how to practice is maybe not super useful, and may not drive the results that we want. So I think when I talk about the data there, I think it really has to be, what case are we making, right? Are we making a case of preserving access? So let's benchmark that. Right. Are we making a case of overall costs or health in the community and how pricing ties to that? Or are we making an argument about quality? And let's be really clear what quality metrics we're talking about.
It just reminds me of quality tied to scale is almost always proven when you're talking about consolidation of a specialty, so that instead of doing 30 surgeries across 20 different, you know, practices, you're doing whatever that math is, 600 in one place, right? Because it has been shown that the more you do of the same thing, the better the quality becomes. But that requires then, most of these things are, there's not geographical overlap, because if there is, then you get in the antitrust, which means, so how are you going to consolidate all of this business in one area? Because now you just screwed the access thing you talked about. And we have seen where systems have tried to do that. We're going to close the cardiology, the cath lab in these four places and put it all here. Uprisings, not just from local people, but from physicians. Yeah. Like, well, wait a second, you can't close our cath lab. So that's part of the challenge too. We're almost at a wrap, but the questions are coming in, and some of these, Brandon, you're going to have to put on like your fortune teller.
Oh, when is I'm like Karnak. Was that his name? Karnak? Was that
Johnny Karnak? Karnak? Yeah. When is that? I'll do the, like, where he has the, I'm going to give you the answer and then you tell the question, and I'm going to say June 2020. The question was, so when is the hospital financing bubble on Wall Street going to pop like it did with the housing market?
Fair. So I always tell people, like, if you really want to know what to do in real estate or Wall Street investing, just like watch what I do and do exactly the opposite. I am not the person to be giving advice on that. And we've had on, Josh Raskin was on our show a few weeks ago. We've had on some different experts in this. You know, I think there are going to be some real problems, right? There are a bunch of organizations who in the not too distant future are going to be in violation of their debt covenants. There's right. just no way, right? Cash on hand is a disaster. If anything, the market trending up has really helped offset a lot of that. Put aside the physician side for a moment, where there's very real cash problems. You know, the average large physician group has about 60 days cash on hand before COVID. Yeah. I can't even imagine what that looks like now. There's going to be some problems. I mean, I don't know that we're going to be looking at the kind of bankruptcies, because there's one, there is so much debt, and there is, you know, there is so much, there's so much underlying real estate value and other tangible assets to secure that debt. Now, whether you can take on new debt or not is really going to be the question. So not to parse the phrase bubble too much, I don't know that there's a bubble that's going to burst as much as we may just see a really tightened restriction on the ability to borrow. And, you know, look, I don't know that that's such a bad thing. I mean, I think have this argument a lot with CFO clients that we have, where, you know, we build towers and you know, and build new rooms and do that because that's what we know how to do, right? We're all in this sort of fixed asset mindset in an industry that really is shifting toward virtual and digital and outpatient and has been pretty aggressively. So that doesn't do a lot to solve the why don't we have enough beds during COVID problem. I know why we don't have enough beds during COVID, because we spent 20 years decommissioning beds to become more efficient. But I think, you know, maybe the bigger question is there going to be adequate capital to do what we need to do on the technology side?
Yeah, and that's a good place to leave, because we could get into the whole debt market issue writ large, which is a pretty scary, you don't want to open that door and look inside that room because it's pretty scary. And that could, that's a whole nother podcast that maybe we can do for fun some other time. Or I don't know if it would be for fun. I have a friend who's a senior financial person at a huge bank. And I'm just constantly saying, like, what does this mean? What does this mean? And the reports back aren't encouraging. So hopefully it's not going in the place that we were headed after 2008. But everything we're talking about, again, with those ripples, it's not just healthcare that would come from healthcare, but what's happening overall could impact healthcare. So probably a good place to leave it. This is great. Great first show. Brandon, thank you so much for helping us kick off.
Yeah, always fun. Plus, I feel like if you and I don't embody the phrase no normal, I don't know what does.
So that's right.
It's very appropriate to be kicking off together.
Personification of that. Chase, thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Enjoyed it.
If you guys, you know, we are going to, again, these are deeper dives. They're weekly. Next week, we have Paul Mattson, who's CMO at Cleveland Clinic. And he's going to give us a spin on why no normals is more than just a few months from his experience before healthcare, which I think will be a fascinating way to start that conversation. So please join us then. But if you've got things you want us to cover, let us know. You can put it in the chat channel quick before we leave, or email us at nonormal@thinkrevivehealth.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or other places. Come to thinkrevivehealth.com for a ton of good stuff. thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19 for everything related to that, because unfortunately, as we said, we're not out of that thing at all. And for a lot of you out there, there's a ton of content there that could be helpful to you as things get super hairy, unfortunately. So hang in there, everybody. Good luck out there in the no normal, and we'll talk to you next week.